WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Charles Bush discovered who he was as an actor when he became a leading lady. He now writes and stars in gender-bending plays that are both tributes to and send-ups of Hollywood. His Vampire Lesbians of Sodom was the longest-running play in off-Broadway history. His Psycho Beach Party spoofed two Sally Field roles. He stars as a teenage girl who wants to be a surfer, but suffers from multiple personality disorder. The Lady in Question was a melodrama set in the 40s. New York Times critic Frank Rich described Bush's performance as a walking anthology of feminine Hollywood legends. Rich asked, but what actor of either gender could top Mr. Bush? Bush has a new semi-autobiographical novel called Whores of Lost Atlantis. Bush says he didn't find himself as an actor until he put on lashes and heels. When we spoke earlier this year, I wanted to know what dressing in drag brings out in him.
Well, what it initially brought out in me was a whole sense of freedom and expression that I didn't have. It was a rather liberating experience for me at first. I think things have sort of changed as I've kind of grown up, become maybe more comfortable with myself. But when I started out, I used to do a one-man show for years that I booked around the country called Charles Bush Alone with a Cast of Thousands. And at the time, I wasn't in drag. I would be just kind of in black pants and a shirt, and I played many different characters, and it would be kind of a narrative where I would have to play every character that, you know, I needed in that particular story. And so often there'd be male roles that just weren't really right for me, and I didn't think I was really very good at, and I thought I was rather stiff. And somehow the female characters seemed the more fun. You know, often women can just be, in our society, can be more flamboyant, more expressive at times. So I enjoyed that. And then when I started performing with my theater company in the East Village in the 80s, I decided just to put on, you know, this outrageous drag outfit. We really thought it was just going to be for a weekend. Little did I know it would be my career. But it was a very liberating experience, and I wasn't, for the first time, I wasn't thinking about, oh, what do I do with my hands? It just, somehow, it came very natural. The interesting thing I find now, though, thousands of performances later and thousands of pairs of eyelashes later, that what was so liberating is beginning to feel a little confining, and I'm actually ready to de-drag for a while, to be a fella, because it just, after all this time, I've been doing it since 84, sometimes it feels a little bit just confining to have my creativity always filtered through this sort of female persona.
What do you think the difference is between what you're doing on stage and what more traditional female impersonators have done? The female impersonators who specialize in Betty Davis and Judy Garland, Barbara Streisand. Mm-hmm.
Well, because they are doing specific people, and I do different characters that are sort of my own invention. Although sometimes I kind of
do a little Judy,
or if I'm doing, like, at one point in the show, I do this old movie sketch, and I kind of slip into a little Betty Davis at times just to kind of punctuate the line, or a little Susan Hayward. But it's basically my own character, I like to think.
But it also seems to me that you're more consciously gender-bending than a lot of your predecessors.
Yeah. But I sort of straddle the fence in many ways. It seems that you can sort of divide female impersonators into two groups. Generally, those who are comedians and are pretty, kind of outrageous looking and somewhat maybe even grotesque, but are very funny. And then there are other female impersonators who go to great lengths to create this perfect illusion of beautiful femininity, and often they kind of lip sync to songs but I'm sort of in the middle, because I'm a comedian, but I look kind of good in those gowns. My legs ain't bad, so I think, so I'm sort of in the middle, and I must say too, I've kind of lost any bit of integrity I may have had. Or I used to go to great pains where we would, when I would do shows, that I never wore falsies, that I wasn't really trying to convince the audience of an illusion. I was just kind of giving the notion of a general idea. But I don't know, maybe it's just I've gotten older, but I'm so padded up. I think I've got two editions of the Sunday Times in each hip, you know, and, you know, my God, you know, I go to great pains now to look very lovely. So, you know, I'm very careful about the lighting. So I don't know what that is. Maybe it's just the more you do it, the more you kind of get into it.
You know, some drag queens object to feminism because it's not feminine enough. And really, some drag queens really believe in traditional gender roles.
Yeah, I would think so. Isn't it interesting? And yet, I guess, you know, I was raised in a largely female household with two sisters that I'm very close to. And so the issues of feminism have always been rather real to me. And so I have always kind of prided myself that the female characters in my plays are sort of feminist role models. I always sort of played the career woman, you know, battling that devil man who's you can't trust him. You know, so I've kind of liked it, and I, you know, I have. Seems like I have a female following. You know, I think there's, you know, always going to be somebody who's upset by something you do, and I'm sure, you know, some women might just find the whole notion of drag just offensive, and no matter what you do, you know, even if I did the Kate Millett story, they wouldn't like it, you know. But I, in my heart, I know that I respect women, and I love the kind of women that I admire, so are such strong women.
For our listeners who haven't seen your shows, let me ask you to say a couple of words about a couple of your shows.
Okay.
Let's start with Vampire Lesbians of Sodom.
Those are four big words. Strong words.
And, well, you know, not the of.
But we had, you know, a hard time, you know, when that show first started in 80, we started in 84, we moved it commercially in 85, and the New York Times wouldn't print the name in the ad.
Really?
And, yeah, and I wondered, I thought, you know, gee, it must be... I think if the play was called The Lesbian, they would have printed it. If it was called Vampires, or even if it was called Sodom, but you put them together and, oh boy, you know, head for the hills.
So tell us what it was about.
Well, it was kind of like a series of vaudeville sketches more than a play. And I played a lovely virgin sacrifice in ancient Sodom who is bit by the very glamorous succubus creature. This kind of Mae Westian... vampirus, and she, the virgin sacrifice, because of this bite, becomes a vampire too. And so the two of them are kind of in a race across time as they go through various centuries trying to steal each other's thunder. And kind of the joke of it was that they were both, after they left Sodom, they both were in show business. And so we saw them in Hollywood in the 20s where they were vamps and silent films, and then in Las Vegas today, and they're still at it. So it was, you know, it was a cute show. And what I liked about it, too, is that underneath all the very silly campiness, it kind of, I thought it had a little something to say about relationships, and I think that many of us have friends or even, you know, relatives who could just drive us crazy, and you'd like to murder at times, but if they weren't around, we'd certainly miss them.
Well, what was the very first time you dressed in drag?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Well, I think when I was about 9, I think Bobby Fitzpatrick next door wanted us to put on his mother's evening gown. But other than that, it was many years later. I was in college and just dressing up for Halloween. But I learned really right away. It occurred to me that I got kind of bored when I just put on the dress and makeup and everything, got all rigged up. Just as an end to itself, it just, I got kind of restless and sort of tired too. You just kind of want to spread your legs and, you know, and relax, you know. And I needed to have the role. It's, for me, drag is so connected with the theater that I can't separate it. That as soon as I, like for instance, we had a float in the gay parade this year, and I put together this outfit to I mixed and matched, and but this at this point I certainly can't. I've got probably more clothes than you have. I mean, I've a lot of dresses for every occasion. You know, if you need,
I'm
anything.
Sure you have more heels than I do.
Yeah, well, call me. You know, and so anyway, so I put together this outfit to wear, just to wear, you know, in this open car. And as soon as I put it on, though, my mind was just racing so quickly. I was suddenly I was Melina McCrory in Never on Sunday. 5 seconds later, no, I'm Audrey Hepburn in a 60s caper film. Oh no! And it was so dizzying that I finally was just getting like hyperventilating just because of the images in my head of the different roles that I could play in that costume. So it wasn't enough just to be, you know, don't I look swell in this lovely couture creation.
You know, it's really funny. I feel like I should ask you for tips about how to walk in high heels. I've never been able to wear heels.
Really? It's so simple.
Not that I'm dying to wear them or anything, but my feet ache and I figure it's not worth it. So you want to give me some tips?
Oh, I could run the decathlon in it. I could. You know, talk about drag racing. I mean, I could really. I walk better in heels, I think, than in flats somehow. I've fallen arches, kind of. I think the heels help me. But I must say, after a number of hours, it's agony. I had this part in the sequel to The Addams Family, which is coming out in November, and I play their cousin, the Countess Aphasia Addams Du Barry, and I was in high heels for 17 hours, on a movie set, and that was rather horrifying, you know. But for a couple hours, I don't know, you just sort of balance yourself and. I took to it like a duck to water. You know, I never quite understood when you see movies like Tootsie where the guys get in heels and they're wobbling all over the place. And I know, I guess, it's for comic effect, but I never found it so tricky.
Actor and writer Charles Bush is my guest. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Charles Bush. He has a new semi-autobiographical novel called Whores of Lost Atlantis. Our interview was recorded earlier this year. Did dressing in drag or doing theater in drag coincide at all with figuring out your sexual identity?
In a certain sense, it did. In just that, when I was in college, I was coming out gay, and I came out gay with a sledgehammer. I mean, I was just, awful. You know, just outrageous. My best friend and I, and we just, it was sort of during the height of kind of the David Bowie sort of, glitter rock period. We had red hair and, eyeliner on, and I had this awful big fun fur, this big fur coat on. I thought I looked like Maria Schneider in Les Tango Paris, but don't know if everyone else shared that opinion. But anyway, at the same time, I'm taking these acting classes, and the roles that you would work on in class would be like, Bo and Bus Stop or Biff and Death of a Salesman, and I just did not identify at all. And they're just there are no roles that or anything, and particularly like in college, we would be it was kind of a method sort of, Stanislavski approach where you're supposed to be using elements of your own, past and your emotions. And it was very hard for me to identify. And so consequently, there were like no roles that I even wanted to play. And I was really tormented because I was obsessed with acting and all my life wanted to be an actor. And I thought, well, if there are no roles in the repertoire that I am desperate to play, what's the point, And I thought, I could be the boy in Equus, but there are many other fellas who could play it a lot better or just as well. I wanted to be special. I wanted to be unique. And I always wrote. And then I was always kind of improvising different characters for my friends. And I had a friend who said, well, this is who you are. This is what you should do. And it took me a while to really realized that was the case, and that what I really loved was writing the story and telling it myself. And for me, drag assuming a female persona is not such a big deal. I know there are great differences between the sexes, but in many ways there aren't. And at least for me, I guess I have a slightly androgynous nature, and for me to go from male to female is sometimes just a question of how I cross my legs.
Can I quote something from the galleys of your forthcoming novel that mm-hmm. I've been reading? Yes. And the novel is called Whores of Lost Atlantis. It's a semi-autobiographical novel. And early on in the novel, the main character, who is very similar to you...
I should say so.
Yes. Says... on a cloudy day, I can't tell whether I'm adopting the mannerisms of an effeminate man or a hard-boiled lady.
Yeah, that's sort of it. Yeah, that book's very personal. It was an interesting thing when I began writing it, about 3 years ago, it was going to be a very superficial kind of anti-mame sort of comedy book. And then the more I worked on it, and I realized that, I was writing from the first person, and it was very much based on my experiences starting my theater company in the East Village in the 80s, I thought it was such a good opportunity for me to really explore, you know, my feelings about drag and androgyny and the creative process, and it was a very good experience for me, and so the book became much richer for it.
Now, your father, I understand, listened to a lot of opera, and did he sell opera records?
No, my father, well, he had a record store, it's true. I guess he did sell some opera records, although I think of him mostly having, you know, rock and roll. But his store was in Yonkers, so it wasn't really an opera haven. But he wanted to be a singer, and so he performed with different sort of semi-professional and amateur opera companies in Westchester, where I was growing up. And so my bedtime stories were the plots of Verdi and Puccini operas, and sort of the first theater I saw were these productions that he would be in, where everything, including the chorus, were painted on the backdrop, and I just was enraptured by it. And I think that whole idea of sort of cheap theatricality stayed with me, and certainly you can see it in my plays.
Yeah, that's certainly the larger than life type of
play. Yeah, I love melodrama so much, and even as much as I love the comedy, and so my plays are often, you know, sort of revenge dramas, and if you took away the element of parody or the, you know, the shtick or the comedy, you know, the stories themselves are stories of passion and revenge and, you know, good triumphing, and there's often, you know, somebody either jumps out a window or is being murdered. I think somebody's been murdered in just about every play I've written. It's kind of odd, you know, and they're comedies. So I think that really shows that earliest interest was in melodrama.
So while your father was feeding you these stories of the great operas and thus nourishing your interest in melodrama...
I had a very romantic sensibility. By the time I'd say I was seven, everything that I'm interested in today was set.
But I bet your father was not very encouraging of your interest in acting out the parts of great actresses.
Oh, yeah, no, pas nécessaire. No, my father's so stage struck.
Oh, really?
So stage struck that I really could have done anything, and he would have been approved. And I mean, just I think when he sees my name on a marquee, I think he can sort of blot out the first name and imagine it's his own. I mean, he kind of lives vicariously through me, and I don't mind it at all, you know. So he lives in Florida now, but when he comes to see me in a show and, you know, I bring him backstage and he walks out on the stage, I can see him just sort of inhaling it in. He just loves it. And so he's seen all my shows, and that doesn't bother him at all.
Charles Bush recorded earlier this year. His new novel is called Whores of Lost Atlantis. He's now in rehearsal for a new production of the musical Little Me in Birmingham, Michigan. According to columnist Liz Smith, the role was first offered to Debbie Reynolds, but when she couldn't be pinned down, the director suggested Charles Bush. You can now see Bush in a cameo in Adam's Family Values in the role of Countess Aphasia.